For my sins on that particular day, I was orderly sergeant, and although being on the move most of the day meant that I hadn't got the usual routine duties of an orderly sergeant to perform, I found that when we got into the LCT, there were some unusual chores to perform. The thing I remember particularly was that every soldier, every airman on the landing craft tanks had to be issued with a blanket, which was his sole bed and bed covering and sole comfort for the night. We had, of course, to just find whatever space we could to sleep in. The landing craft was full of vehicles. There were about four columns of vehicles. I can't remember how many vehicles a landing craft would hold, but not many. Essentially, an LCT is shaped like a shoebox with an engine and just a small amount of accommodation at the rear for the crew. But basically, it's just a hold in which you accommodate vehicles and personnel. And as far as the personnel are concerned, they have either to lie or sit on top of the vehicles or get underneath them. And at night, we just crawled under the vehicles and slept on the iron deck of the LCT. Next day, we had hoped that we would be on our way, impatient to get wherever we were going, but more particularly, having experienced the discomfort of a landing craft, we wanted to make our stay on the landing craft as short as possible, so we were hoping that we'd move off. Actually, it was a fairly boring day. It was a fine day, I remember, and we lay on top of the vehicles, and the only thing to enliven the day was the fact that we were gathered together to be given a message from the Supreme Commander Eisenhower and one from Montgomery. And I think that was the highlight of the day, highlight in inverted commas. Disappointed as we were on Saturday not to get moving, we thought that, well, at least next day we would be on the move. But next day we woke up to wind and rough seas and were terribly disappointed to be officially told that the landing was being postponed for a day and we would have to stay on the landing craft, and we didn't know when we would be able to put out to sea. In the event, we eventually moved off on the Monday morning, and we got moving about 9 o'clock in the morning, and once we put out of harbour to sea, then the full panoply of the Royal Navy was most impressive. There were thousands, it seemed, of landing craft, and an inner screen of destroyers and frigates tearing around like sheepdogs, knocking us all into some sort of order. The more distant the eye went, the bigger the type of naval vessel. It was a vast convoy. Our major preoccupation on setting sail was, once again, our discomfort, because our only food tended to be, in the main, self-heating tins of cocoa and soup, and we didn't find this easy to keep down in the rolling that you get in an LCT once it's put out to sea. So most of us spent the early part of our journey being sick. When we weren't being sick, when we did have something to eat, we tended to use our mess tins, and being a serviceman of good, tidy habits, we wanted to clean them when we'd finished. So we thought at first a sensible thing to do was to tie string around the handles and throw them over the side and clean them in the sea. The North Sea is now littered with mess tins that the British Army lost on their way to liberate Normandy. There really wasn't a lot to do. We padded around. We'd been told to remove our boots, so we crawled around bootless and tin hatless beneath the vehicles, or just lay on the top when there was some sun. At night, we slept underneath the vehicles. They were shackled so that they couldn't move, but they rocked on their springs, and the water which came over the front of the landing craft swilled along the deck and made it rather uncomfortable. We spent the entire Monday at sea, and then about 10 o'clock at night passed through the Straits of Dover. once through the Straits, then we, of course, still weren't sure whereabouts in France we were going to and how long it would take. And as time passed, we felt more and more uncomfortable being on the landing craft. And we're getting to the stage where we would have charged ashore anywhere just to get off the darn thing. But we were fated to stay on the landing craft for one more day. And the next morning, Tuesday, the 6th of June, dawned quite a fine day, but the sea was rather rough. And there was very little for us to do but wait to see what fate had in store for us. And most of us, I think, spent the day, it being rather rough, rolled up in our blanket on the deck of the landing craft. Towards evening, I don't know whether we were told or we just became conscious of the fact that we were moving into the French shore. And as it got dark and we went in, we could see a fires burning and we began to hear gunfire of various types. Just when things were beginning to get interesting, we were told to put on our boots, put on our steel helmets and keep below deck, which of course meant below the vehicles. Things seemed to drag even more then, because as we approached the shore and the sound of, we could only rely on sound to give us a guide as to how close we were and what was happening. But as things livened up, instead of going straight in, then the engine slowed and we lay offshore for a while, and it seemed there was confusion as to what part of the beach we should land on. And time dragged. Eventually, the engine started up with real purpose and vigour, it seemed, and we seemed very decisively to be moving in. And as we got closer and the noises got louder, we started grounding, but continued driving forward. And eventually hit fair and square and firm on the sand. The engines were cut back. The ramp went down fairly quickly. There was a pause, and then the first of us jumped into the water and the darkness and the noise. And we were ashore. It's difficult to remember now precisely what my feelings were. My main recollection is of confusion. It was dark. It was noisy. We were trying to keep our heads down. We wanted to get through the water as quickly as possible onto dry land. And we were scared. As we came off the beach, we made for a track and fortunately found that there was white tape indicating a path we could follow, a narrow track that we could follow, which had been checked for mines and was clear. To be perfectly honest, we didn't immediately identify this, and it wasn't until we dived for cover a few times when particularly loud noises were going off round us, and the senior NCO in charge of our group had pointed out to us that the tape was there and that we were diving into the area that hadn't been cleared, that its real significance struck home. Our task immediately on landing was to dig in and set up a radio unit which would transmit information back to England, giving details of landing craft which were coming into the beach and what they carried by way of ammunition, aviation fuel, cannon shells, that type of thing. So on getting off the beach itself, our first task was to dig in. And life was made a little easier for us, because when we moved to the point where we were going to set up our unit, we found that the Germans had already dug a series of defensive trenches. And we decided that we'd had enough for one day, and as well as we could, bearing in mind that the activity that was going on around us, we tried to curl up and make ourselves as inconspicuous as possible and get some sleep, which remarkably we managed to do.
Cipher Sergeant John Fenton's recollections of the historic Normandy landings, which took place 40 years ago today. And that interview was first broadcast in Digest in 1981 in a series called Geordie at War, produced by George English.